From Northeast Public Radio, this is The Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score. Killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it. It's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
Well, and a good day to you all. It's The Media Project, and I have to warn you that Dr. Chartok is grouchy today.
It is not a good day. I disagree with you, and I hope that you guys aren't going to provoke me today.
It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood.
Here we are for The Media Project. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union. Over there is Dr. Alan Chartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio. You may call us as two old white guys, Tweedledee and Tweedledum. Just like to say, I am D.
And I'm dumb.
Thank you very much. Simon Says. And there's Caitlin Brown, professor in the journalism and communications programs at the College of St. Rose. Longtime reporter before that. How are you?
I'm well.
That's a good
thing.
How goes? Hey, you know, we have in front of us something that we can talk about that does not relate to Donald Trump. And that's probably a good thing because people want us to talk about
it. Does it relate to kissing?
Well, indirectly, because once you kiss, it can lead you to becoming a mom. And we're talking about moms in the newsroom and how hard it is to be one. Why do you ask about kissing? What's that have
because
to do with?
Because I am a great believer that I have to watch the newspapers to find out what social cues I have that are acceptable or not. So, for example, this very morning I read that it is unacceptable to give somebody a kiss when you meet them because it's sexism and you're not supposed to do that anymore.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. I hadn't picked up on that. I thought you were talking about forcible kissing, which is an accusation against a politician in New York State.
And this may fit into that area of unacceptable, you know, male behavior towards a female.
Well, there you go. So it's a good thing.
I read the papers, and that's why I had to.
We need a green light, Alan. You need a green light.
There you go.
Green light means
always with the sensible.
You have to be able to read people and recognize whether or not that is acceptable. Do you have a long-term relationship with the person, and is it the sort of relationship where greeting with a kiss is acceptable?
But does somebody have a green light, a red light, and a yellow light on their bodies so that you could see that you have a green light? Or you come in the room and somebody says, you have a green light, you may kiss me?
Well, there was actually a funny New Yorker cartoon last year showing two couples approaching in the street, and one turns to his spouse and says, quick, are we handshakes, hugs, kiss on the cheek, or kiss on two cheeks?
You know, I love
how
it.
What is your social cue for how do you interact? But this is not about journalism.
Well, actually, it is because the New Yorker, of course, is a journalistic enterprise and a very good one.
An outstanding one. When it comes to the job satisfaction of female employees, comes this new study, the media ranks lower than the banking, public relations, and technology industries. How about that?
What does that mean?
Well, it means that it's hard to be a working mom in journalism. Do you want to talk about this with some experience, Caitlin?
Well, it is hard to be a working mom in journalism. And when I became a mom, I stayed a mom for a while. So I did not immediately return to the newsroom because I expected to return to the newsroom. But then I unexpectedly fell crazily in love with my child and then my next child. While I was still on leave, I had another child. So that leave went on for a while. But it's very hard to juggle, as most working moms know. And I think their partners know as well that it's very hard to juggle caregiving and still do work. But I think there are opportunities in newsrooms to allow more virtual or tethered working so that if employees are able to work not in the office, they can be at home working. Like yesterday when we had a snow day, I got so much done yesterday at home with no interruptions at work. It was wonderful. So there are ways that you can be productive and not necessarily have to be in the newsroom.
Far be it from me to give you a hard time, but here's the deal. You're now an academic. You're not a newsroom mom anymore. And everybody knows academics have a softer life than the people who work in newsrooms.
So go ahead, prod me. Prod. So here's what I think about that. When I switched to academia, I did think I would have a different experience. I have never worked as hard in my life, ever. And I thought I worked pretty hard in journalism. I think I'm even working harder in academia. So
actually, you know, when I worked the hardest was when I was a TV reporter producer. I worked harder as a television person than in newspapering, amazingly enough. I had no idea about running around like crazy to get this little piece of video to plug it in and then to dash back to the studio. It's pretty amazing. But, you know, every job carries work-life balances. But in journalism, the news cycle has, you know, some unique demands because you have to keep up with the story. You have to go wherever it goes. I remember knowing a mom who was covering the White House who, when the president suddenly took off on a trip, had to drop everything and call her husband and say, "You're picking up the kids." And she always had a go bag packed, you know, so that if she had to go over to, over to Iraq in that case.
So before I get into too much trouble, Kaylin, I want to say that as a lifelong academic, I don't want anybody to believe that academics never do anything. They do. But it has to do, and I think it has to do with the reporting too, that, you know, different people approach tasks differently. So there are academics who are lazy, L-A-Z-Y, lazy. And you know it and I know it. And then there are academics like yourself. You never worked harder in your life because you're always going to be looking for the next task to do. Don't you see?
I do, because we get new students every day. And with new students come new challenges and new ways to help them. And so each one likes to come and be seen. And we like to provide one-on-one attention to our students. I hope that will happen for my own children and everyone's children, that their professors would give them extra time to make sure they're getting what they need out of their career. It's a big deal to invest in a college degree. So that takes a lot of time to help a student chart their course.
But surely you know that there are some professors who are L-A-Z-Y, right?
Judge and ye shall not be judged.
Okay. So anyway, it's a challenge that newsroom managers, like people in roles like mine, have to think about. And we have often done this. We give people time off to be with their kids. And then if they say, "I only want to work 4 days a week," they come back at that level. Sure. We figure out a way usually to make it work, or else even do a job share. And we've had that experience too with some cases. It doesn't always work out as well, but you have to kind of bend over backwards to do it if you don't want to have a newsroom that is just all young guys who tend not to do that. Bear in mind, though, that New York State has recently enacted, as of January of this year, New York State has now a paid family leave requirement of 12 weeks being phased in, 12 weeks of paid family leave for all expectant parents, regardless of the company's size.
Well, that's so easy for you to say, but let me ask you a question, Rex. You have to give somebody 12 weeks off, and they are essential, for example, to your news operation. What do you do during those 12 weeks? Do you hire somebody else? You really can't.
You do. You try to get by. We have hired temps. We've been helped by a lousy economy over recent years by having people who really want to do temporary jobs. And we've actually found some great hires by bringing temps into the newsroom. And I got hired as a temp when I came out of journalism school. There was a woman on maternity leave, and I was hired for what was supposed to be a five-month stint. I ended up staying 11 years at Newsday. So these things can be useful, but I think you just have to bend over backwards and some cases, if you want to have diversity in your workforce and if you want to not be a workplace that is hostile to parents.
Well, I certainly agree with you, Rex.
Well, there you go. How about that? Okay. He agrees with me. This is the Media Project. If you want your thoughts shared, we are media@wamc.org, and that would be a good place for you to write and share some of your thoughts. Dr. Alan Shartok is here. Dr. Kaylin Brown, I'm using all the doctors here, and I'm Rex Smith. I'm not a doctor.
Well, don't you remember the 2,000-year-old man where Dr. Haldanish was what Carl Reiner and Mel Brooks made up, Dr. Haldanish. It was not doctor, it was DACA. You can be DACA here.
Okay. Thank you very much. So the stock market has had some ups and downs lately, and it is a challenge to think about how to cover that because you are tempted to be sensational about it. In terms of absolute point value, the Dow had the biggest point drop in history of a single day. It lost 1,175 points the other day. The previous record was 400 points below that. But as a percentage, it was much lower than the, 22-point drop on my birthday in 1987.
So I remember that day, Rex, and not because it was your birthday. I was a business news reporter at the Times Union,
oh, wow.
And we were writing about the stock market fluctuations. And that story, we played that very big, but I do not believe it was on the front page, but it was about, I think it was 10,000, is that right? When it broke 10,000?
That was a big deal. But,
yeah. Imagine now, the numbers have changed so much.
But Rex, I'm flabbergasted. You were born in 1987? That was your birthday?
He's a youngster.
It was not my birthday. It was would have been about my 35th or something like that. Yes,
One of the things this article is saying about don't feed the stock market panic, and there is a concern that...
Which article are you speaking
of? It's an article by Al Tompkins of Poynter Institute.
The Poynter Institute, I apologize. And in that article, they talk about that journalists maybe are creating too much of a frenzy and almost sensationalizing the numbers and causing concern by investors or potential investors and the state of the economy.
Hey, let me take a different view than yours, professor to professor.
Yes,
let me,
professor.
This is like two chefs talking. Hi, chef. Hello, chef.
Let me take a different view than yours. I thought that most of the media that I was watching, CNN, MSNBC, reading the papers, and what Rex has just mentioned in terms of putting things in perspective, was extraordinarily responsible. In other words, I think there was almost an understanding we are not going to cause a panic here in the news industry, as almost everybody had gotten the memo. So I saw it a little bit differently than you. Yeah, they talked about the precipitous drop, no question. But on the other hand, they did put it into perspective. And every time I watched, they did.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good. I think that's really thoughtful because it was a 4.5% drop, 4.6% drop, and that's happened apparently many times. The fact is we are probably heading for a genuine correction. The market will drop and take a longer time to recover. That is likely ahead. But it's always important also for us to remind people, and this is something that talk radio has not been good at doing in recent years, those folks over on the AM band, and that is that the stock market is not the same thing as the economy. A thriving stock market does not necessarily mean that everybody does well. So that's a good point to bear in mind.
You know, Rex, you're absolutely right. I have a real interest in the way in which news media sort of follows a lead. Mm-hmm. In other words, what I was just saying before is I was fascinated by the fact that as a group, as a responsible group, the media was pretty good during this rather than inflame the situation. And it's almost as if there was an agreement to do that. Now, I'm not a big conspiracy person, but I do think that they just decided we're not going to add to this mess.
Well, I received a lot of mobile notifications during the day from my print sources of news, which would have indicated to the average person that there was something unusual happening and was cause for concern. My mobile notifications from the Times and the Washington Post, and I also get one from the Times Union, did talk about the stock market, and not once, more than once during the day. And then local news TV, I happened to be watching it for not that reason, and I generally don't watch it, but our students were expected to be on a spot, and they were bumped, which is typical, but they were bumped because of all of the stock market coverage, which when I watched the local NBC affiliate was leading and I thought was pretty extensive coverage. This isn't a criticism, but I could see where individuals would have been concerned by the coverage.
This is so interesting that you guys, look, there are three of us sitting in the room. There's almost a teeny bopper you.
He's looking at me. I'll go for that. I'll take that at this age.
Then there's Rex, a little bit older. And then there's me, who's ancient. Now, to each of us who have 401ks and things like that, the news means different. Are you following me here? The news means different things. So that you're sort of scattershooting. I don't know how to say this, but to me, it may well be much more important than to you as a relative junior in all of this.
Well, and also for the 50% of the Americans who are not, do not have a horse in the game, right? They don't have any investments in the stock portfolio or stocks at all. So those people, which make up a high percentage of the population here, are not vested in what's happening in the stock market. They're hoping to get food on their table.
Well, so let's all remember that in the old days, we had something called defined pensions, meaning no matter what happened to you, you're going to get a pension. It was going to be a particular amount of money. Most places don't have that anymore. Most places are now investing in 401ks. It's better for the employers. It is not necessarily better for the employees. And that's happening. And so what news means to receptors, meaning people like me, people like you, people like Rex, is entirely different. And I'd love to know from Rex whether there's any recognition on your part when somebody writes a story, that there's a whole different group of audiences that are receiving this.
That's absolutely true. And recognizing that our particular publication has an audience that is more highly invested, that is, that 50% who have nothing in the stock market are not newspaper readers as much. Some are, but more newspaper readers are invested. They're a little bit better off financially, and they're older. So it is really important. You know, it was not that many years ago that we carried 3 or 4 pages of stock listings in the paper. The business section had all of these stocks. Of course, now, and when we first took it out, people were very angry with us. We still carry a small chart of local stocks of interest for some of our readers. But, you know, that material, the information on the individual stocks, is so much better delivered digitally.
Everybody's got a cell phone, you know, knows that.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think our coverage needs to reflect the realities of our audience, which is why you're always toggling back and forth between what you aspire to have in your audience and what you really have. Our entertainment coverage, for example, still is heavy on the entertainment that is of interest to our readers as opposed to younger targeted stuff for people who we might like to pick up as readers in the future.
Sure.
You know, it's a tough choice because when you skip some cool new act that's come to the Palace in Albany or something like that, you wonder, gee, was this the right thing to do? What about the young people who are, you know, or...
They aren't reading newspapers anyway.
They're not reading newspapers anymore.
Although recent data shows that the 18 to 24-year-old demographic is increasingly paying for their news.
Yeah.
So that's a recent fact I read in the last week.
It may have to do with what I wanted to bring up next, which is Donald Trump. Sorry.
has to do with Mr. Trump.
That's a buzzkill, Alan.
But think of it for a second. You got this stock market story, which is huge. Mm-hmm. It has been a major prop for the president, who keeps saying, you know, I'm great because the stock market under my watch, and he says it over and over again, even though it may not be true because Obama, you know, and we all know the drill. But he says it, and now he's got a problem. Because if the market drops substantially, which it did, or even if it becomes volatile, which it has been doing, there's a political backdrop to the way in which editors have to decide how they're going to play the news, because is it going to help them or hurt them?
And I suspect that's not as much an issue for the straightforward news media, let's call it the real news media that I represent, as it is for the pro-Trump media. The folks in Fox News are going to have to figure out, what are we going to do? We're going to downplay this financial peril that may confront people if the market drops precipitously because it doesn't reflect well on the president, when we know that Fox News basically exists at this point to support the Trump administration.
That's right.
It is a house organ of the Trump White House.
Well, I agree with you. But the problem here is the value of the dollar, which is when an editor of a paper has to make decisions on how to play stories. And I'm talking now about the national media, more New York Times and Washington Post and others. Look, if the value of the dollar is dropping and the market, even if the market is going up, that's going to hurt some people. And most people don't understand it and have to understand it.
Mm-hmm.
The people on the top understand it, but I don't think John Q. Public does. Yeah. I know I do when I buy an occasional Diet Pepsi and see how much it costs.
Well, there are lots of opportunities for economic literacy training that we need to move into, and maybe that's part of our role. By the way, we need to talk about, you mentioned the national papers. The Los Angeles Times is not that, but it is a big paper, and there's big news out on the West Coast that actually has some relevance in the local community where we originate. You know, we have talked here about the newspaper of your home community over in the Berkshires, that is the Berkshire Eagle in Pittsfield, which has gone over the past 2 years into local ownership, buying it back from the hedge fund that owned it. Same things happened in a way to the Los Angeles Times, which was owned by Trunk, which is the old Tribune newspaper company.
That's Trunk, not you know what.
Trunk.
T-R-O-N-C. Yeah. Trunk, it's called. What a stupid name.
I know.
It's the new name for the newspaper element of Tribune Company. They separated out their profitable enterprises from their newspapers, which include the Hartford Courant, Chicago Tribune, the Baltimore Sun, and the New York Daily News now. So that company now has sold the L.A. Times to a local guy out there, a doctor in L.A., who is actually a billionaire now. His name is Patrick Soon-Shiong. And he says he's going to invest in the paper and that it's going to have a solid foundation now.
Well, what else would you expect him to say? Even with the Berkshire Eagle, you know, which you're right, it's local ownership right now, but it's local ownership by a group of people, very good people, I know many of them, who are very bright and who are very civic-minded. But what happens if local ownership goes to somebody with some poison in his eye? You know, it's not necessary that people who are local owners are good people.
Well, what's interesting about this physician is that he made his billions in monetizing the healthcare industry. So he is a businessman more than a physician.
Mm-hmm.
And his holdings in the healthcare industry are fairly extensive. I went to the website of his primary company. It was difficult to figure out exactly what they do.
What they do, yeah. Yes. I could figure that out.
But they talk a lot about healthcare, and I didn't get the sense they were necessarily delivering healthcare, but they're making money off of healthcare.
But Rexy, there was hell to pay out there, wasn't there? Because there was plenty of staff problems and revolutions. And
They've had terrible leadership.
So what was going on?
Well, the publisher was suspended because of alleged improprieties involving his relationship with women. They had an editor who lasted just 3 months on the job after Tribune had fired 4 previous editors. It's been a real tumultuous time out at the LA Times.
So do you think they sold it because of those tumults?
I think they sold it because they weren't making money. Mm-hmm. And they needed to have some cash in house because Trunk was just barely profitable. You know, it's a company with revenue. It's publicly traded. So it was, I'm just reading here, it reported revenue of about $350 million in the most recent quarter, but it earned only $2 million on that $350 million in revenue. So it is just edging profitability.
Well, Rexy, it won't be the first time that a group goes out and buys newspapers every which way and loses.
Yeah.
Right?
They become over-leveraged. They have to use all their revenue to pay their debt, leaving very little for the newsroom.
Where's Gannett right now?
Well, Gannett took a tumble, actually, on that bad day in the market. They lost 5% of their value in a single day. So it's not a great situation to be working in Gannett, and that's why they've had to lay off so many people, including even the editors at the helm of newsrooms.
And yet they have continued to buy newspapers.
Yeah. I don't think you welcome that. If Gannett comes into your community, I don't think you should be happy about that. But that's just somebody from the outside looking at it. Maybe there's a different viewpoint. Media at WAMC.org. If you live in a Gannett community and want to say good things about it, who knows? Maybe people do.
Kaylin, you look perplexed.
Well, I like that Gannett story back when they put a map out downstate about all the gun licenses. I know it caused a big problem when there had been the shooting in Connecticut, the tragedy in Connecticut, but I remember that downstate, one of the Gannett properties, I believe.
The Journal News in Westchester, Rockland.
Had produced that coverage of who owned licenses in Westchester County, I think.
Uh-huh.
And
there was, but
I thought it was excellent journalism, and I thought they were justified in producing that story.
Hmm. What do you know? Well, there are individual actions that are just terrific in newsrooms under terrible financial circumstances all over the place these days. So we hope that will continue, and we hope that new individual ownership will do in L.A. what I think has happened in Pittsfield, which is I think the local ownership has sustained the journalism that is the tradition at the Berkshire Eagle. We're out of time. Dr. Chartok and Dr. Brown, as we say, Alan and Kaylin, better known, and I'm Rex Smith. Grateful to our producer, David Gustina, who has just slipped into the studio to tell us it's time for us to get out of here. Thank you all for joining us. We'll see you next week on The Media Project.
They used to work like hell just for romance. But finally, the movies notwithstanding, they all got tired of patches on their pants. They organized a union to get a living wage. They joined with other actors upon a living stage. Now newspapermen are such interesting people when they know they've got a people.
The Media Project is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. Alan Chartok is CEO of WAMC, Professor Emeritus at the State University of New York, commentator, columnist, and author. Kaylin Brown is the chair of the Department of Communications at the College of St. Rose. And Rex Smith is the editor of the Times Union. You can listen to or podcast The Media Project anytime at WAMC.org or just download the WAMC app for your iPhone or Android at the Play Store today. Thanks for listening.
It's funny, Wall Street never has complained. But publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give free cheers for freedom of the press.